Welcome to the Skinfluencer Podcast, a place where we can discuss, along with some very special guests, how beauty and fashion intersect with race, identity, and culture. I'm your host, Asia Jackson, and I'm so glad you're back. Today's episode is another special episode for me because today's guest is my mom. I wanted to have her on this podcast because she has two kids, she's retired, she has lived through a lot, she's lived through many decades, but she's also from another country. She was born and raised in the Philippines and came to the US when she was 28. In addition, she's also indigenous. She comes from an indigenous group called Igorots, which are a people who are indigenous to the Cordillera Mountains in northern Luzon in the Philippines. So I thought she would have really interesting perspectives regarding beauty and fashion, not only because of her age, but her culture and background. We had a really interesting conversation. My mom likes to talk, so I actually had to edit this down a little bit, but we talked a bit about how American colonialism influenced indigenous fashion and lifestyle. We talked about what finding her personal style was like, living in a very conservative culture. We even talked about liberation in personal style and how her style changed when she retired. October is Filipino American History Month here in the US, and in the Philippines, it's National Indigenous Peoples Month. So I really wanted to dedicate this episode to Filipino heritage, indigenous history, and I wanted to give my mom the space to talk about what it was like to grow up as an indigenous person and an immigrant. I think her story would resonate with a lot of those listening, particularly those that are immigrants or children of immigrants. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Mae Jackson, Melinda Jackson. Welcome to the Skinfluencer Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, you are the second guest here. So how do you feel about that?
I'm feeling very special.
As you should, period.
I really should be the first, but it's okay. Second is still good.
Well, it's Filipino American History Month, so you had to get your episode during this month.
Oh, I see.
Think about that.
Okay. I believe you.
Let's start off this podcast with talking about your humble origins in Baguio City, Philippines. So,
yes.
You were born in Baguio.
I was born in Baguio in 1962. And I grew up. I was born in my grandmother's ancestral home in Pinsao, Baguio City.
And we've had that house for like ever.
Yes, we still have that house until now. So yes, so when I was six, we moved to La Trinidad, Benguet. It's an outskirt of Baguio City.
Because
my father got transferred there. He got a job at the municipal capital, provincial capital is what they call it, I guess. He worked in government for all his life. Before he retired, he became the director for ONCC, which is
So ONCC, I have it up here on my computer. It says, you know, Republic Act number 8371. This is like the Senate, you know, .gov.ph website. And it says an act to recognize, protect, and promote the rights of indigenous cultural communities / indigenous peoples. So
in
I'm assuming that's what he was working on, was that
yes he was stationed or he was in Sanfer, I think it was in Pampanga, because of the Etas there, because they have indigenous peoples there. So yeah, he was there with my mom for the longest time.
Just to give you guys listening some context, my mom is Indigenous Filipino. There's a bunch of different Indigenous groups throughout the Philippines. We are Igorot, specifically Iboloy. We're from the Cordilleras Mountains in northern Luzon.
Mm-hmm. From Benguet.
From Benguet. Lola's side, my grandmother's side, is from Baguio. And then my
mother's side.
Yeah. You mean. And then my grandpa's side is from Atok. And I actually want to talk about, like, Igorot life, Igorot fashion, Igorot culture. So my great-grandmother, Lola Buani, what was her style like?
Oh, my grandmother, oh, she was the strict one. My mother's mother, on my mom's side, she was very strict, but she was clean and tidy and neat. And every time we go to her house, our rules, we really hated to go there. We usually go visit her on Sunday, but as kids we were like rowdy. We liked to like run around, and she doesn't like that because she doesn't like the doors like banging, you know, opening and closing. And but there's so many like fresh vegetables there, and we loved it. We loved climbing trees because she has the backyard, because it's a big lot where my grandmother's house is. She has like fruit trees, guavas, mangoes, passion fruit.
And it's all organic.
Yeah, it's all organic. Mulberries.
It's so funny that her style reflects like who she is as a person. Yeah, she was like super strict.
Super strict.
But her hair was always like slick back bun, and like
it was all braided and put up, always in a bun. And I always see her like, you know, brushing her hair after she washes her hair, and she brushes her hair like that. And you know that hair that falls out from like brushing, she would like roll it into a ball. It was so crazy, but
it was like this big ball of hair.
Yeah, a big ball of hair. And as a child, I'm like, wow, that's cute.
So I feel like Lola Buani's, so your grandmother's generation was the last generation before Americanization. So she used to wear like Igorot clothing, like traditional Igorot clothing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the older people before, they still use the that's their garb. That's their everyday garb, was like the tapis and
the tapis,
whatever blouse that they have.
The tapis is the skirt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tapis is the skirt that they wrap around. That's the divit. Yeah. That's called divit.
Oh, okay.
The tapis.
Okay. And then Lola's generation, your mom.
My mom.
That's when they started wearing like Western clothing, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. My mom. I remember her pictures. She wore like the actresses in the 50s. That's her clothes, because her uncle went in the Navy.
The U.S.
Navy, and he used to send boxes. We call it balikbayan boxes now, but I don't know what they called it before, but he used to send us like toys and clothes and silverware, cameras. So we always had like the best, you know, whatever is like the new camera, we have it.
Best gadgets.
We're always the first to have TV, black and white TV, color TV. Phone. So everyone, all the kids in the neighborhood are like always in the house during weekends. And you can see, because there's a lot of like chinelas or slippers outside our door.
So I guess because of Lola's uncle, and you got the balikbayan boxes full of stuff from America, right?
Yes, from the US. So we always have like, that's why my father was always best dressed. He's always in suits.
Yeah, I always saw him in suits.
All his pictures were in suits.
So to give you guys a little bit of historical context, the Philippines was under Spanish rule for 333 years. In the late 1800s, there was the Spanish-American War. So America wanted to take Philippines from Spain. America ended up gaining the Philippines, and then there was the Philippine-American War. So there was actually a war between the United States of America and the Philippines. That's not usually talked about in history books. I certainly didn't learn about it in American, like, U.S. history. I learned about it in the Philippines, though, while I was going to school in the Philippines. But I just feel like that's a war that they don't really tell. They don't really talk about that here in the U.S.
Yeah, it was the Americans that really paved the way, like roads and everything, to go up to the mountain province. They called it, I think, Mountain Province before. It was Benguet.
Oh, that's true. Because so Igorots were never colonized by the Spanish.
It was really hard
for them to get up there.
It was hard for them to get up there because there were no roads before. So they have to, like, really go up the mountains, climb. And, you know, the Igorots are warriors. Mm-hmm. They would, from my grandmother's stories, they would, like, push down boulders of rocks and stuff. So it was the Americans.
Wait, that, so they would push down boulders, like, mm-hmm, as the Spanish are trying to come up?
As the Spanish are come up, yeah. Well, that was my grandmother's story. So I don't know, but, you know, I mean, even with the Japanese invasion, they camped out in my grandmother's house, because my grandmother's house was really, like, large, like,
it has
on
the
top
view
of the mountain. It has the best view, and they camped out over there. They took over my grandmother's house, but my grandmother said they were pretty nice. They loved them because they were giving out chocolates to them, you know. So
I feel like there's two sides of the story always when it comes to war, because, you know, I've always heard the stories of, like, the comfort women in the Philippines, you know, where they, mm-hmm, like, you know, became sex slaves and all that. But it's really great to hear that that didn't happen at Lola's house.
Yeah, it didn't happen. They were from my mother. She was a kid then, and she remembers, you know, all these cookies and chocolates that they get from them.
Yeah, I remember she said they asked if they could have some fruit from the tree.
Yeah, from the trees, because they do have. Oh, my grandmother's place is really, I mean, she grew, like, vegetables in the backyard. I remember her planting beans.
And she was always moving around.
Yeah,
like,
she's
even
always
when she was
moving,
like, 100 plus years old, she was still hiking. I remember that. I was like, you're so old and you're still, like, out here moving around. It's crazy.
She loves to hike. She walks around, and she, you know, she's always, like, moving around. So that's why she lived really long.
Yeah. I feel like the national dress of the Philippines is, like, Maria Clara. Like, it's very Spanish Tagalog.
Yeah, different regions have their own.
They have, like, their own traditional
garb. Yeah,
their
own traditional
garb. Because, you know, mm-hmm, Igorots, we have the bahag.
They have the bahag for the men, the divit for the women. The women before only wear the divit. They don't really wear tops.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't wear tops, so they're, like, half
naked.
Naked.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was okay at that time.
Right.
And then the Americans came, and the Americans gave them, this is in the mountain province in Baguio City, Benguet. They influenced the Igorot people, like, really hard. Like, even their music, the country music, because even now that's what the Igorots like listening to is
country
music. Oh
my gosh, if you guys go to Baguio City, don't be surprised when you see everyone wearing jean jackets,
boots,
listening to country music and listening to reggae.
Yeah. The cowboy hats, I mean, they love those, the buckles, like the big buckles.
Yeah,
that's
very,
just,
like,
very American, the music. I remember I used to, like, I saw pictures of, you know, our great ancestors wearing bahag with the, we call it Americana. It's the coat.
Like a blazer?
Blazer coat for men, the tailored suit coat. And that's what they wore. They wore that with the G-string, the bahag.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they're, like, barefoot.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Uh-huh. Exactly. I wish that I can show pictures. I'll try to see if we can put it, post it.
Yeah, I would love to see that picture, actually. That is kind of hilarious.
They wore that. They were like, you know, they were heavily influenced. Even the pipe.
The smoking pipe?
The smoking pipe. The Americans introduced that. The Jeep.
Oh, yeah, jeepneys.
Yes, the jeepneys. They left it there after the war, and now it became like jeepney now. But
like
it
so
came
much
from
of
the Jeep.
So much of modern Filipino culture is from American colonization, I feel like.
Yeah, like for most especially in Baguio City, Benguet, Mountain Provinces, it's heavily Americanized.
Yeah, I feel like wherever there's
and
a military
we speak more
base,
English than Tagalog, for one.
Yeah. I feel like wherever there was a military base, there was a lot of influence.
Yeah, the reason why the Americans came up to Baguio, when they saw Baguio, the weather was nice. They built, they call it R&R. They built a recreational base for the armed forces, the U.S. armed forces that was stationed there. And they called it a Janhae Air Base.
To give you guys some more context, the Philippines is very, very hot, like in the lowlands. I feel like when you look at Philippine
it's a tropical
vlogs,
country.
Yeah, there's like a lot of beaches and it's very tropical and it's hot and humid. But when you go up to the mountains in, you know, Benguet, Baguio, Mountain Province, places like that, it's pretty cool. Like,
it's cool.
It's not hot. It's not humid.
There's no... the humidity, there's humidity, but it's, you know, it's not that bad. I would compare it to California or Hawaii.
I would definitely say that the temperatures in Baguio are like LA. Like it's like 75 year round. Do you think that the weather in Baguio influenced fashion for people differently than lowlands? Like how?
We wear jackets all year round. We wear jackets, thick ones, wool, knits. That's why Baguio City is well known for wearing knits. What do you call that?
Beanie?
Like beanie hats. We wore beanie hats. And a lot of times people from the lowlands, is what we call them, come up to Baguio and buy those beanie hats that has Baguio City in them. We hate wearing those because we're from Baguio City. But yeah, our fashion was really different from the Tagalogs and the Ilocanos.
So you grew up in the 70s. You were like a teenager in the 70s, right? Like teenager, late teens.
Yes, yes.
This was the disco era.
It was. I was in school at St. Louis University, and that's when they had, I remember this, tic-tac-toe. That was the first disco in Baguio City. It's called
tic-tac-toe.
And I was young then. I was like, what, 15? I was in a first year college.
Oh, yeah, because the education system's different there.
Yeah.
So you were in first year college at 15.
Yes, I was first year college at 15. We don't have middle school. So from elementary, which is 6 years, and 4 years of high school.
Yeah.
And then college after that. So, yeah. So, I mean, my father was very strict, so he wouldn't really allow me. But
did he?
I mean, I was a rebel.
Yeah. So, like, what did he? Did your parents ever scold you for, like, the way that you dressed during disco era?
No, because I was, there was, in Baguio City, there's really no, the type of clothes that we wore at that time was pretty much covered up.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like Philippines as a whole, like, a whole country is pretty, like, conservative.
Conservative, well, only in Baguio because of the weather. Now, when you go back, when you go down to the warmer areas, the hot areas, they can wear sleeveless or spaghetti straps.
Oh, I see.
We cannot wear that in Baguio. They make fun of you.
Really?
If you wear that. Yeah, they will think that you work at a bar or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very conservative.
Oh.
But it's okay because we don't really wear those. We wear button-ups, you know, sweatshirts, sweaters.
Even to the disco?
Jackets. Yeah, the disco, I remember, because I wanted to like make you wear one. We have the chaleco or bolero.
What's that?
It's like a short vest, but it's open. We call it bolero or
It's cropped.
yeah, it's like up to here. So I remember that was the fad then, and
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay,
I couldn't, you know, I can't, I don't have money. I can't buy like the new clothes, so I make them. I made it myself,
Oh,
so.
yeah. Okay, so you are a child, you're a middle child
I'm
of
a middle
eight.
child. I never get like new clothes unless it's my birthday. And even on my birthday, I get like the ones that they sell like in the market, you know, like the cheapest one possible.
Did you go ukay ukay?
Oh, I did a lot of ukay-ukay, yes, because at the time there were a lot of secondhand.
Ukay ukay means thrifting.
Yeah, ukay-ukay Philippines is thrifting. I really think that I was the first ukayer. Because I know my fabrics, you know, I know what is quality for some reason. I remember when I was a
Maybe it's because
child.
your uncle sent you like the
Yes,
good
I think
quality
so. I
stuff.
think so. I the plaid, the wool.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. I didn't even like think about that. I had a doll. Going back to the Balikbayan boxes. So, it was my first favorite personal item that I really loved. It was a doll. It was one of those, it's not like a baby doll, but it's more like a girly doll, but it's not skinny like
Like Barbie.
Barbies. So, but the arms moves, you know, and the head moves and the legs moves. So I usually like, you know, get like scrap material because my mother loves sewing too. And I always get her scraps in, and I make gowns for my doll, and I make like, you know, like a long gown and a slit on the side and sleeveless, and then I make like the scarves for my dolls. I mean, I loved it. And yeah, I think that's how it started, and then I just really got into like, you know, I had my own style.
If you had the resources and access to become a fashion designer, do you think you would have chosen that path?
Probably it wasn't an option then,
Right.
you know, that like that before was just for the rich people, you know, because they can afford to not earn a living, and they can spend, they have like the budget to buy
And the time
at
to
the
do it.
time, yeah, to do it. But you know, for us middle class, it's, you know, there's a predestined
Yeah.
future. It was already like made for us. But I didn't go that way because I was a rebel. I was like the I didn't follow rules.
What career did your parents tell you to do? Did they like for did you did they pressure you to do anything?
No. We chose our own. Like my oldest sister is a midwife, and next to her would be Ludi, my sister Ludivinia. She's a nutritionist. And my sister Sovani is an accountant, and then my brother Benny is took up forestry, and me, I'm an accountant. Lawrence,
He's an auto engineer, isn't
an
he?
auto engineer,
Yeah.
and my Abby is a civil engineer, and my sister is an electrical. The youngest one is an electrical engineer, but became a businesswoman.
So everyone went to college.
All of us went to college.
When did you graduate college?
Oh, well, that's a long story. You know, I should have graduated in 87, 88, 79, 80, 81, 82, but because I was in and out of school because of partying,
So then
well, I only had
you had to go back. What year?
finished 1990.
Oh, really? You finished that late? Oh, dang.
Because I should have graduated in 82 or 83. But because I enjoyed life too much.
Okay, so now we've
Well, I
reached
was the headache of my parents. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so now we've reached a new decade. We've reached the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You were supposed to graduate in 82. You graduated in 90 instead.
Well, that was my party time. That was my dress-up time. That was when
What was your fashion like in the 80s? How did it change from the 70s? Because now you're an adult. You're in your 20s
yes,
now.
Yes, yes. 70s, I was in, in high school, we wore uniforms. So there wasn't really much dressing up to do except like jeans and t-shirts. Although I remember I had that favorite. It's one of my newer clothing that my mother bought for me was a jumpsuit. It was plaid yellow. I remember that. I think I wore that every day.
Cute.
Until it got, ripped. Because I remember I wore that and went bicycling. And I had an accident and that thing ripped from the inseam. All the way up. So I don't know what happened to that now, but it was my favorite. I
think. Did you ever make your own clothes? Like, did you change clothes?
Oh my gosh!
Like sewing.
Okay, so my grandfather still was like sending us like corduroys because it was a thing then, corduroy in Baguio City. I don't know about Manila or the other cities, but corduroy was the thing then, and at the time it was the flare. It has to be flared, but the corduroy was like. Fit
it was like straight leg almost.
Yeah, straight leg, yeah. Or it was baggy but like tight over here,
yeah.
It's not. So what I did, me and my sister used to do, was like cut it like on the side. We crocheted to make it wider. So we added like kind of like a crochet netting so that it would flare.
Cute.
Yeah, and it was cute. So we did that.
Where'd you learn how to crochet?
Oh, it was, in our elementary and high school days, we have what you call home economics. And we learned cooking, we learned knitting, we learned crocheting.
Yeah, when I was going to school in the Philippines, we also learned, they taught us how to crochet. They taught us how to plant a tree.
Yes,
they taught us how to use a sewing machine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's how I learned.
Yeah.
And my aunties, my mother's sisters, they used to like, crochet at home. Most of their like sheets, bed sheets and stuff, it's all crocheted. So I learned from that.
Was there like, was style in the 80s in Baguio? In the Philippines, was it the same as 80s fashion in the States?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big hair, Madonna.
Sneakers.
And then I wore like flat boots and I wore like, I would go to my dad's closet and I would borrow his coat jackets.
The
blazers. And I would take off like the padding on his shoulder so that it looks like baggy. And I would wear that with white t-shirt inside and jeans. And I wore my boots and I would go to the disco like that. Hey.
I feel like I got a lot of my style from you in the 80s.
Yes. I remember too. I had, because I don't like dresses.
Yeah.
I don't like heels and stuff. But I remember there's this one nice dress, like it's purple. It was purple. I got it from my aunt because she worked in Taiwan for a while and she gave it to me. And it wasn't really my style, but I really liked it. So what I did was wore sneakers with it.
Mm.
I went out. I went to my favorite hangout place called OJ, Orange Julius. It's where all the teenagers go and have like, hamburgers and milkshakes. Anyway, so I make dresses. I make those things casual. And in Baguio City, we don't really like wear heels because of the terrain.
Oh, yeah.
It's
too hilly.
Down, it's too hilly, and we go down and up Session Road. That's the famous Session Road in Baguio City. All the businesses are there, restaurants and malls and stuff. And so my fashion before was sneakers, baggy pants, t t-shirts.
Yeah, I feel like your style was pretty androgynous.
Mm-hmm. Big jackets.
Yeah. And that's definitely where I got gamosas. My style from, because I love androgynous fashion. Yeah. I love wearing men's clothing.
Yeah, I wear men's jackets, clothing,
because they have the best jackets.
Yeah.
They have the best jackets.
They do have the best jackets. I mean, women's jackets, I mean, they don't really, like, make those, like, hip-hop stuff, you know? They make it for men, but not for women.
Yeah.
For women, they have like, blouses, yeah. And which I don't like. I never really wore blouses before until I, you know, started working.
And then the 90s is when I was born.
90s is when I came to the U.S.
What year did you meet Dad?
86, maybe?
Yeah, 86, right.
Because we wrote each other for 3 years before I came to the U.S. I was in school then, and he was in school. So we wrote each other. You know, it was snail mail before, so it takes, like, 4 weeks to even, like, 2 weeks to get there and 2 weeks for the reply to come back. So, or sometimes telephone, that's how we communicated before. But when I graduated, he came over and he proposed at that time, and he was interrogated by my dad and my uncles.
What are your plans?
Yeah, what are your plans?
No, what are your intentions?
What are your intentions?
What was, like, Lola and Lolo's reaction to... Okay,
the foreigner.
Yeah, because so you're Igorot. So it's one thing to marry a non-Igorot Filipino, but it's another thing to, like, marry a non-Filipino just, like, in general. So, like...
Well, you know... Yeah, mostly, especially my siblings, they married. There's a thing there that you call a love thy neighbor. They just marry, you know, their townspeople.
I also feel like there's a cultural difference. Like, if you're Igorot and then you marry a lowlander, there's such a huge difference in culture.
I mean, I was not accepted, I think, a lot of times by my Igorot relatives because... My friends, I was like hanging out with non-Igorots at that time, only because I find it fascinating to learn about the culture outside of the Igorot.
Mm-hmm.
I know my culture because I grew up in there, the Kanyaos, and you know, and the our elders. Because I was young, I wanted to learn more about what's outside.
You're right.
So even with music. I wasn't into country music. I was into Eagles, you know, like whatever was the in thing at the time. Mm-hmm. I was more like hip.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the way I dress is different.
You're not like other girls.
I'm very special.
Do you think that your parents would have accepted you marrying a non-Igorot Filipino?
Probably just gonna be like a lot of it's gonna be tough only because of the culture.
Yeah.
And if I'm marrying somebody who is not non-Igorot may understand me but not his family.
Because
you know, when you marry somebody, you get married in the family, you know. You're not just marrying your husband, you're marrying the whole family.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, connected. And I don't know how that's going to be because our culture is very much Igorot. And they may not understand the Kanyao that we do and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I feel
and,
like
yeah.
Kanyao is such a, like, it's such an Igorot thing.
It's an Igorot way. And
if no, you show, yeah, I feel like if you show, like, a Catholic Filipino Kanyao, mm-hmm. they're not. Yeah, it's, like,
and most non-Igorots are Catholics.
Yeah.
And I remember every time I go to my friend's house and then they pray and they have all these like religious, you know, Santo Niños and
crosses.
Stuff, the crosses in their homes. And I can't relate to that. But mm-hmm. I'm open to learning about those things. And they pray before. I mean, Igorots too, we pray, but we mostly pray to Gabunyan, which is like a god. There's no Jesus in the Igorot. There's a god.
So for all the listeners, Kanyao is like a cultural feast and like celebration that Igorot people do for many different reasons. We do it at weddings. We do it at funerals.
We do it at funerals too.
You know, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
We do it when someone buys a new house. And all of this is so different from lowland culture.
Very different.
It is so different.
Yeah.
So what was their reaction when you married an American? A black American at that.
There wasn't really like, because we're more Americanized, you mm-hmm. know, like, and we have like a U.S. base. So it wasn't really like a cultural shock or something. It wasn't a shock.
Okay.
But I've really had relationships before too. But so they just really wanted me to, like, you know,
settle
get
down.
Settled.
Like, at this point, we don't care. Just get married.
They're like tired. So I'm like, okay, you should just like get married and get out of here.
So they had no problem with him being black, right?
No,
because like whenever I listen to other Blasian kids' stories about their parents, they're always like, yeah, like my Asian mom married my black dad and my Asian parents like hated them. And like there was a whole problems like within the two different families. And I never experienced that growing up. So.
You know what? I think it's because in Baghdad City, we were Americanized.
I feel like there's more black people because there's a military base there.
Yeah, there's a military base there, and they always like visit there. So we were...
familiar.
We were familiar with non-Filipinos because of the base. Mm-hmm. That's there. And Baguio City is like the summer capital of the Philippines. So people who are visiting, like foreigners, they always come up to Baguio and we see them and we know and they interact very well. We interact very well with other nationals because we speak English.
Yeah, I was going to say that because there's a lot of mixed American Asians.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, like, I would say most of them are part Filipino, and that's because they speak English in the Philippines. Because if you think about it, like, oh, yeah, like, my grandpa on dad's side, he was stationed in Korea, but they didn't speak English in Korea. So it's really difficult to, like, have a relationship with someone when mm-hmm. you don't speak the same language.
Yeah,
so I feel like mm-hmm. that's why there's so many mixed American Filipinos, because...
Yeah,
you know,
we learned English as soon as we started crawling, you know?
So you think because of the military base and because you guys speak English, it wasn't really a big deal for Lolo and Lola that you were marrying a black American?
Yeah, not in my family anyway. I don't know about the rest of
the
community, but in my family, there wasn't really no problem.
I feel like I didn't really experience... I felt very included in my family growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I talk to a lot of mixed kids who are, like, black and Filipino or black and Asian. And they're like, oh, yeah, my family hated me. And I'm like, damn. And I'm just really glad that I didn't have that experience. They were just... I don't know. They're very accepting and very, like... I didn't feel like I was... an outsider when I was with family. Now, when I was out in the public, that was a different story. But within my family, they very much made me feel Igorot.
Like, I mean, even for me, every time I go out in a non-Igorot communities, well, it's indigenous, so they were always misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have like the preconceptions of us.
Stereotypes.
Like, stereotypes and all that, but... every time that they learn I'm a Igorot, they'll be shocked. You know, like, oh, you're an Igorot?
You don't have a tail.
You don't look like an Igorot. You know, and sometimes it depends on my mood. If I'm not in a good mood, I would just like, you know, like,
ha ha,
ha ha, you know, joke. But if I'm in a bad mood, that's when I'm like, hello, what do you think? What do you think of what an eagle would look like?
And the thing is, they think it's a compliment when they say stuff like that.
Yeah, like, I would.
Oh, you don't.
It's like a backhanded. It's a backhanded compliment, I think.
Speaking of backhanded compliments, I remember one time on one of my YouTube videos, someone commented and said, "Oh, you're black and Filipino. I didn't know that black and Filipino could make such a pretty girl." That is not a compliment.
Like, gee, thanks.
What are you saying? That's crazy. Okay, but anyway. So you met dad in late 80s, in 86.
Mm-hmm.
You graduated in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you like get your visa? When did you get married? When did you come here to the
States? So when I graduated, your dad came and he proposed. So when your dad came back to the States, he started the paperwork. And that was, I graduated in March and of 1990. And I was given a visa and came to the U.S. in November of 1990.
Oh, wow. So that was fast.
That was fast.
Dang. Yeah. What was your first impression of the United States? Because this was you'd never visited before. You moved here for the first time.
So like, when I, at the airport, oh, let me talk about my outfit. Okay, so this was my first time to fly, right? So
flying on an airplane, period.
Flying an airplane. So during my graduation, I wore white, right? White skirt and a white blouse. I wore that flying because I'm like, you know, flying is like, you gotta look, you know, pretty cool. I wore my snake pumps.
You wore heels on the plane?
I wore heels with my attaché case and my x-ray.
Like a briefcase?
Yeah, I have a briefcase. It wasn't at nighttime. I remember I had like glasses, but it was colored glasses. There's like, a shade.
Oh, okay. What color?
Grayish.
Okay.
Or brown. I don't remember now. But so I saw your dad and his friend, Sunny. And they had flowers. He had a bouquet of flowers. And yeah. So when we were driving, it was nighttime. We were driving from LAX to San Bernardino because that's where he was stationed at the time, at Norton Air Force Base, which is closed now. And I saw like all these lights in these wide freeways. Mm-hmm. So I saw like cars parked, right? Like cars, new cars parked outside.
Like in a parking lot?
Yeah, in a parking lot. Like, just parked, like, and it's lighted so I could see it from the car, from the freeway. And I told your dad, I'm like, why are the cars like parked outside? They're not locked. They're not gonna get stolen. And they're all like just laughing at me. I remember your dad remembers all these crazy things that I, you know, my first impressions.
Yeah, that's funny, because in the Philippines you would never see just a lot of like new cars
like
just
outside.
Yeah,
no,
they would be locked up
in a building.
What was your first job?
My first job was I came to the U.S. right, and I have a degree. Mm-hmm. I have a degree in accounting, right? So I'm like, I have my like college ring. So I you know, I felt like I'm important, right? Like I could land a good job right away. But no, I had no experience. I never really like worked in the Philippines, right?
Oh,
so I had no experience, you know. So I really wanted to work, but I didn't have a car. So what I thought of is like working at night. But the only business that's open at night are restaurants, right? So that when your dad gets off work, he can take me. Mm-hmm. So I applied at this really nice Japanese steakhouse in San Bernardino, and it's like a pricey restaurant. So yeah, I got hired. And I had to wear like a kimono with those little wooden
all the
slippers.
Little shoes.
Yeah, the little shoes. And we'll be walking like that. Hair is like up, so I look cute. And I remember like somebody ordered, because it's also like it has a bar. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the drinks, you know. So somebody ordered like a wine, a Chardonnay.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, Chardonnay. So I just wrote it down. Like, I don't know if I even spelled it right. Chardonnay. And I ordered it at the bar. And then, you know, they know, I guess. And then somebody ordered like a soda. What is it? Water?
Club soda?
It's club soda. So I'm like, what is a club soda?
Oh my God, that's so...
Isn't that crazy? There's little things like that. Yeah. You don't know because there's no club soda in the Philippines. We have soft drinks.
That must have been hard.
Yeah, it was hard for me. So, you know, but I didn't want to like show that I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Right, but...
So when did you get your first accountant job with your degree? Because you got your degree.
I remember I told my husband at a time, I told Baron when I came here, because, you know, I was like a little bit like a party girl in the Philippines. So it was mostly like, you know, didn't work a day of my life. And I came to the States and I told Baron, I'm like, it's like I just came here to the States to work.
He was probably like, yeah.
Yeah. He was like, duh. You think you'll be like partying all your life? So adult, just, I became an adult here.
You had to grow up.
I grew up here. Yeah, I was away from family. And
that must have been hard, though, to like, because I feel like Filipino culture, Igorot culture is very like, family focused and community oriented.
In the community, you know, you're
always surrounded by someone.
Yeah, you already know these people. For me, I had to like familiarize myself with you know, the people, the language, food.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean, there's so many, and I had to like make my own appointments. I hated, you know, being on the phone, because sometimes I would mispronounce things, especially if it's a three-syllable word.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, sometimes I will mispronounce, like, you know, last names.
Comfortable.
Comfortable is like, comfortable. You know, like, you know, little things like that. And sometimes the person on the other end on the phone... I could feel that, you know, they don't understand if I don't pronounce it right.
Right.
Yeah. Your dad was good with like teaching me, like, you know, telling me though this is how it's pronounced or this. So, as soon as I know though, then I would learn and
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's my problem with Tagalog is the syllables.
Yeah,
because like
where's the accent?
Yeah, the accent patterns in English and Tagalog are so different.
Yeah, it is different.
And there's more three and four syllable words in Tagalog, and they pronounce it differently.
Yeah, there's so many, you know, like the T, it's not a hard T. In Tagalog, it's, even when you're speaking in English in Tagalog, if you're a Filipino, the T is always hard, like. T, but in like cattle, you know, like, but in the US, a cattle, you know, you don't really like pronounce it like the way it sounds.
Right. You had an accent when you came here. Cause I remember.
Oh, of course I did. Yeah.
I was like, watching, you know, our home movies and you had an accent and you're like, Aisha, like yelling at
especially
me.
Especially when I'm mad. Yeah.
Oh, especially when you're mad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you had to lessen your accent to be taken seriously?
Yeah, I have to like pronounce, like I said, I have to pronounce it the way they pronounce here.
Mm-hmm.
So my problem is that every time I go home to the Philippines, when I speak like that, they think that I'm maarte.
Oh, like being pretentious.
You know, like being pretentious and stuff when you speak like that. So I try to like speak Ilocano or Tagalog or English the way they speak English there.
Right.
I know a lot of Filipinos still, they've been here a long time and they still couldn't, but I think it's because of regional accent. I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
But of course, you know, some people just don't have, it's a different part of the brain, I guess. I think language
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, different people can have different abilities. Some people can do different accents, some people can't. Like for me,
linguists.
Yeah, like I love doing my Australian accent, but some people can't do an Australian accent.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And I can't do certain accents, but other people can. So exactly. I just feel like, you know, it's just an ability sort of thing. Like it's not really indicative of someone's intelligence. I hate it when people think that.
Yeah, that's one thing about Philippines. They think that, you know, The better you speak in English, it's an indication of smartness.
Yeah, intelligence.
Intelligence.
Oh, and you speak English, not, quote unquote, properly. You must be smart.
Yeah, I must be smart. Yeah. But it's not.
Yeah, because like, you know, my cousin Gali, he's so smart and he still has like kind of an accent. Mm-hmm. It's like your ability to speak English without an accent has nothing to do with like
how smart it's a different part of the brain. Yeah.
So a little while ago, you said that when you came here, you had to grow up.
I had to grow up fast.
Yeah.
Because.
And do you feel like that pressure to grow up changed your personal style?
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember your pictures in the 80s, it was very fun. Like you're wearing sneakers. And then your pictures in the 90s. Obviously, you have two kids now and you're working corporate America and you're wearing like skirts now and you have to wear heels because there's a dress code.
Yes, yes. There's a dress code, especially at the bank. There's a dress code. You know, you have to wear stockings and pumps, black pumps and skirts or slacks. Mm-hmm. I never really like went shopping for that. I went to thrift stores because I love their jackets at the thrift stores. Their blazers and their slacks and suits because they're nice. They're you know, usually with those, with suits, they have like really the nice quality at the thrift shop. I go thrifting for that.
That's kind of what I miss about thrifting. And it's funny how thrifting has changed since the 90s. Because I remember you used to buy Angelo's clothes at the thrift store and he hated it. He was like, oh, you have to go to the thrift store. But now for teenagers, like it's a cool thing to like go thrifting and buy your clothes. And I think that's what has changed in a lot of thrift stores. Because of fast fashion, people are buying so many low quality clothes and then they realize they don't like it, so they donate it to the thrift stores. So now thrift stores are full of like low quality terrible clothing, and it's harder to find those good quality fabrics and stuff because of fast fashion.
Thrifting now is like, especially those, you know, like the well-known thrift shops, you go there and sometimes I still feel excited doing that because it's like finding treasure.
Yeah, when you find something, it's euphoric.
And it's cheap. If I find something like a really good price for like, I know that it's a really good quality, I'm happy. And that's what thrifting is to me, is like, oh my God, I, you know.
Yeah, it gives you a little thrill.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little thrill. Exactly, exactly.
So you mostly like went thrifting for your work clothes and just clothes in general.
Would you buy just clothes in general. And then I, you know, I kind of like don't like the clothes in the mall because of low quality fabric,
right? Yeah,
and it's expensive. It's like, in my mind, it's like, why would I pay, you know, like $30 for like this, you know, like one, those
rayon
fabric that it I just don't like it. And I when I
and $30 was a lot in the 90s.
Oh yeah, my gosh, $20 was a lot.
Yeah,
at the time. So
how did your fashion change when you turned 50?
I was still like, you know,
you're still styling.
Wearing, I was still styling. I still wore like, you know, the boots, whatever is like at the time is considered, you know, like
fashionable.
Fashionable. I did that, but usually I wore like the classics, you know, like button downs and pencil cut skirts, suits.
And you were still working in your 50s, so.
Yeah, I was still working.
But now that you're 60 and retired, your style, in my opinion, like your style was so different from when you were 50s, because I feel like, because when you stop working, you don't have to buy work clothes anymore.
I don't have to buy work clothes anymore. You know, I never like really buy jeans before. I used to like buy dresses, you know, stuff, because, you know, every day you have to change.
Every day you're at work.
Every day I spent more time at work than, you know, anything else. And weekends I stay home or just, you know, do errands and stuff. So that was more like shorts and t-shirts and stuff, jackets. Anyway, now that I'm in my 60s, I'm back to my hip-hop.
Yeah, I feel like you went back to your style in your 20s.
Yeah, my like sneakers and jeans and gym what do you call sweats.
I feel like
knits.
Retiring was liberating for you.
Okay, I am now in my 60s, and it's like, you know, when I own my time now. Mm-hmm. I don't have to like have a schedule of like I have to wake up because I have to be at work at 8. And then I have to be like at work until 5 o'clock and then come home and then take care of everyone. Right now, I feel like because you're grown, your brother's like, you know, has his own life now. And my time is mine. I don't have to like, I have to be anywhere except where I want to be.
Exactly. Per.
Yeah. So, you know, if I want to go to the gym, I would go any time of the day. I will eat whenever I want, whatever time of the day. I don't have to, you know, like rush eating.
Yeah. I feel like I hate so
rushing.
Much, yeah. I feel like so much eating. Of our lives are controlled by work.
Somebody's time. Yeah. Yeah. You have to be always like growing up, it's still the same. My parents are, we wake up, you have to do the dishes. You have to like, you know, you have to go to school. Yeah. So everything is about everyone's time. It's not your time. You're just doing, you know, whatever society tells you to do. I graduated college and then I had to work. I get married and then it's not my time. Still not
you
my time.
Kids. It's
still
it's not your time.
Yeah, it's I have my kids. So my time is now spent with work and kids and husband and home, you know, taking care of the house. I mean, never my time. My time is only when I sleep. I wake up.
Man,
and it's the
being
same
a
thing.
Woman,
yeah,
sounds exhausting. Especially
it
your
is.
Generation.
Yeah.
I feel like for my generation, I think that social media and the internet has opened up so many opportunities for women my age, for my generation.
Of course, yes. You don't have to like follow like the same route.
Yeah.
You know, like the 8 to 5. At least now you have an option that you're still making money even without having like
a traditional 8 to 5.
Job, 8 to 5, somebody, you know, you have a boss and mm-hmm. they want you to do this and that, and you have to like work with people, different sensibilities, different culture, different, you know, you have to work with people like that.
Yeah, I also feel like these days, not everywhere, and we still got a long way to go, but I feel like employers are a little bit, are becoming more aware of like people's mental health.
Yes, that's why I'm glad that Google changed, I think, changed the way they treat their employees. Remember when You can come whenever, whatever your attire is. You can come in your pajamas.
I see. Yeah.
They built their employees like a ping pong station. You know, like things.
Yeah,
like
I guess
those.
Like the yeah the work culture.
The work culture is like
different
really,
from
and
the
you
90s.
Don't have to really to like somebody is like telling you to what to do like from minute to minute. Mm-hmm. As long as you do. You know, that's why I like jobs that has to do with projects. As long as you do your project. But I don't like the traditional job where, because I've been to those type of jobs where they breathe on your mm-hmm. your neck.
Down your neck.
Like, this is, you know, you cannot be caught, like, doing nothing.
Right, yeah.
You have to constantly, like, kind of, so I usually... I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that act like I'm busy.
Yeah, I think especially like with the pandemic and working from home, I think,
oh,
I don't know.
I feel like things have changed
so much,
yeah,
in the like
yeah,
work
everything
environment.
Everything is lax now. And
obviously not everywhere. I just want to put that disclaimer.
Oh yeah, the service people, I still feel for them because
yeah.
they still have to like work with the general public, and that's the worst job ever. And the food industry.
Honestly, I would agree with that. Because when I worked at Best Buy as a sales associate and you're working with the general public, Whoa.
Same thing when I worked at the bank.
It's yeah, like, it's like,
oh my God.
Sometimes you see the worst of humanity every
yes,
day.
Yes. you do meet the like the best and but
best and worst.
Best and worst. Like, yeah, and everything in between.
All right. I think we're gonna cut this this interview short because we were talking it, yeah, we're at like 1 hour 30 minutes. But I don't know, it's really easy to talk to my mom because we have these conversations all the time and we just don't record them. So like the conversation that you just listened to, that's the type of stuff that my mom and I talk about all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, thank you so much, Mommy, for being on my podcast.
I still have a lot. I wish that I can talk about when my younger years when I was partying.
Oh,
but nobody, maybe, but your my kids don't want to hear that.
I want to hear about it. I'm sure everybody listening wants to hear about it too. Maybe we'll do like a part two.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about like the 80s and
yeah,
what is the party scene at the time and how is it like to be like a student, you know, like the places that I hang out with, what type of music we listen to.
Yeah, I'm sure people want to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us if you want more.
Yeah, let us know. Send us a DM at Skinfluencer. Leave a comment on our Instagram post. Send us an email. Let us know if you want a part two.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
If you love me, please leave like heart emojis on the comment section. Okay.
Well, thanks, girl.
You're welcome, baby girl.
Peace.
Peace.